And it's Thursday. It's 10 a.m. Mountain Time. It's time for Tom and Shane Business and Politics. Happy to have you along with us. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. Hey, we'd like to remind you to subscribe, ring the notification bell, like us, leave a comment. In fact, here's the countdown for you to subscribe. Put your cursor on the subscribe button. 3, 2, 1, click. It's that simple. Nothing bad will happen to you for doing that. So, and also, if you'd like to support us monetarily, there are several advantages for doing that. And there's a description in the link below as to how to support us. And of course, we do these on StreamYard. I don't know why I keep calling it Streamline. There's a Streamline bus service here in Bozeman. I guess I'm confused with whatever. So anyway. Tom and Bozeman, Shane and Tobin in beautiful Kamloops, Canada. And we got a great topic today, Shane. Is the supply chain going to collapse? So we've got to talk about that. What do you think? Are we in trouble or what?
Well, it's again the irony of the 21st century and the social networking. They've made a better story out of it, calling it a supply train supply trade routes. But it's basically the trade routes, you know, trade routes of the last 500 years they're talking about. And the reason I say that is because 80% of global trade by volume and 70% of global trade by value are carried on ships and, you know, handled from port to port, port to train to truck and truck to your local establishment. So it's an important aspect of what we're going to talk about today is the shipping side of it, because that's basically where 80% of everything we get comes from somewhere else. The other aspect of it too is the cost and how the cost of fuel, labor, and maintenance of the vastness of all of this global trade is. The biggest component, of course, are ships. There's principally four types of ships that carry everything that we consume: cargo, container, tanker, and, you know, and bulk. And each one is very important. Barges, but they're not. There are some ocean going barges along coastlines, but the big ones are offshore. So, it's the context of what's involved in global trade and the trading routes is by far the most important aspect of what we have to say. That's why this issue between China and Taiwan is more than just Taiwan. It's actually trade. It's actually global trade in the trading routes.
Yeah. Yep, that's where we find ourselves. Well, as with everything else, there's a governance system that keeps track of all this stuff, and there's rules and regulations and all kinds of things, and that's one of the reasons that we're in an issue here is because sometimes these regulations get in the way of doing things efficiently sometimes, Shane.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Geopolitics and geography are you know, one of the biggest issues of managing it properly. Logistics is the second, of course. That's in everything that's moved.
Sure.
The concern about decarbonization and sustainability, I mean, that's become a new one, you know. And then just the health issue, you know, COVID did a lot to interfere with it, and I firmly believe this whole COVID shutdown in China is a ruse. I think it's meant to hurt the United States, and it's an intentional. They're willing to shut down their parts of their economy to hurt the U.S. The remarkable thing of this supposed second COVID in China is it hasn't shut down their construction, and it hasn't shut down their food chain within the country. But boy, anything that can be shipped outside the country, to the U.S. in particular, all of a sudden it's been shut down. So but these are the kinds of things that companies have to deal with, and we'll see how things change, because right now, all the major corporations that went into China 20, 30 years ago are having to make a decision about new facilities and updated facilities.
True.
They should be built here, not nowhere else. Not even in Canada, not in Mexico, built here in North America and the United States, period.
Yeah. Well, three causes, three major issues contributed to this. The first one you mentioned already, COVID created a global worker shortage, and those workers that were working somewhere went somewhere else. Now they've got to get them back. Number two, customers changed how they buy things. They're buying them online. They're buying them from locally, buying them from other places. And number three, manufacturing and logistics systems are up and running near maximum capacity. What that means is that factories, manufacturing, refineries, all of these things are geared to run at or near maximum capacity. They aren't designed to run half capacity. So there's no room to expand. There's no room to put out more. And that's one of the big issues that is going on now, particularly with the gas prices and things like that.
Absolutely. And the other aspect of this too that has to be included is air shipping. In the last 50 years between Federal Express and UPS and DHL and so on and so forth, all of these have contributed to a massive amount of air freight. In fact, the people riding in airplanes is the cream for the airlines. Mm-hmm. The money maker is everything they haul underneath. They've developed containers that fit specifically in planes that just roll in, roll off, so they can easily unroll, empty and load them. Mm-hmm. And it's a great thing to realize that it isn't just on the seas, but in the air where everything is being shipped. That's where the other 20% is shipped, is basically by air.
Yeah.
And
FedEx, UPS, all ship everything by plane from.
No, that's right. No, but yeah. But yeah, the 80% is by basically ship and truck, and then the other is 20% by plane and truck. But you have this integrated, system. It's been vertically integrated by an exceptional number of companies working together. To make it adaptable and to make it, where it's everybody can work together. And it's a fabulous thing to see. And the numbers are phenomenal because the global 7.5 billion population is just eager to consume, whatever can be delivered.
Yeah, that's also true. Well, the other thing we wanted to talk about briefly, you sort of touched on it. One thing that the U.S. and Europe in particular, not so much the U.S., but Europe, have slowed buying from China because of the Ukraine. There's a question that maybe Xi may not survive this situation, depending on he's up for another election. He's supposed to be the president for life, but he is up for election again. And whether the folks pulling the strings behind the scenes are going to let him continue or not is up for grabs.
Well, it's a harsh reality for the state that the party's in China. The urban centers now are crowded with over 400 million people. They've overbuilt the country. There's a lot of waste because it's a communist system.
Yeah, they got ghost cities all over the place.
They have empty cities. There are over 89 million condos and apartments that are sitting empty now for like 20 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have cities, literally cities.
Yeah, cities. Yeah.
They built, the plan was to build 20 cities to house 20 million people, and half of them are empty.
Yeah.
But having said that, it's driven the global economy because of everything they bought for, since 2000 or since 1990, 95 till today. And they're continuing with this process, but Chinese don't want to buy an apartment for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. They're trying to make other changes to force it. That's not working. And they have a demographic problem with their population. So, yeah, I don't think he survives long. And mm-hmm. the reason is because I think within the next 6 months, I'm cutting this back because I've been warning about it for some time. But I think in 6 months, you're going to see 400 million, Chinese in the urban cities like Shanghai to Peking demonstrating because the closing and collapse of manufacturing in China. Mm-hmm. It's starting now in some of the cities they've shut down. I mean, they shut Shanghai down. 35 yeah. million people. That's mm-hmm. 35. That's the entire population of Canada in a city. Like, yeah. Whoa.
That's
big, baby.
It is a big place. No question about that. So,
I mean, a guy walks yeah. around like this going, yeah. It's like a hatchet chop,
right.
It's not a wave hello. It's a hatchet chop goodbye.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, many retailers rely on just-in-time inventory ordering. What that means is that they have computers that when something is rung through the cash register, it makes a note as to how much is left in inventory. When it gets to a certain point, it triggers the owner to order more. And that's so you don't have to keep tons of inventory in your back room. You get it just in time. As you're running out, a new supply comes in. Now, with this supply chain problem, that is an issue that stuff doesn't always show up on time because of the things we talked about earlier. So some of these major companies that rely on volume, warm bodies walking in their store buying stuff, they don't know what they're going to have and when they're going to have it.
That's right. And when you go back to the whole concept of shipping everything, there's over 60,000 ships, that I described, of which container ships are, a major part, over 14% of the 60,000. And China has, over 55,600 of these. And interestingly enough, your minority leader, Republican McCormick, he's from Kentucky, that stupid mm-hmm. senator yeah. that's the minority. His wife's family is one of the largest shipping families in China. And, she's been the Secretary of Transportation under two Republicans, Trump and Bush. And yeah. so, this all runs deep, right into the politics of your country. Into the executive branch of your government. And, it's a fabulous thing to see. These container ships can hold, 14 to 15,000 containers. Mm-hmm. They're massive ownership of, by company. APM Maersk, if you ever see a train going by with a container with M-A-E-R-S-K, Maersk on it, well, it's come from China.
Yeah.
So, that's a long way.
That certainly is. Yeah. Well, the other issue, we have a guy here locally who works for a company that does, they put the cafeterias and things in schools and corporations and large companies and things like that. And getting the stoves, getting the coolers, refrigerators, hoods for the stoves, stainless steel, things they work on the food with. They don't know when that stuff is coming. So the client is sitting there saying, hey, I've got to open this. I got to open this school. I got to open this business. What's the deal? And they don't have anything to tell them. It's going to be 2 years That's right. before this thing shows up. On the other side, the demand side, gasoline, the perfect example there, because we've got people are, they apparently don't seem to mind $4 gas because they're going to travel on Memorial Day like never before, apparently. And off they go. So, that's not everybody, obviously, but certainly, the demand exceeds the production. So you know, both sides cause a real logistical problem.
That's right. And this is a major issue for all the global warming. And and also with the price of fuel. Okay. I mean, look, these ships are massive. They travel at 20 to 25 knots. That's about 25 to 28 miles per hour. That's it.
Yeah.
28 miles across an ocean, even in flat, clear day. Mm-hmm. But the point is that a container ship, the average is 63 gallons of marine fuel per day.
Yeah.
So not only do they have to carry the
goods, cargo,
the cargo or goods that they're delivering, but they also have to carry the fuel to get there.
Yeah.
So it's a combined situation, and it's a, you know, talk about a footprint. I mean, it's like a, you know, it's like walking on stones across the ocean with the amount of carbon they put out. So again, this is one of these areas where you don't hear the global warmness. You know, they don't want to talk about any of this because without these ships, we don't live in this incredible 21st century. We don't live in this technological wonder. We don't live in the best country clubs in the world. We, you know, we go back 500 years overnight.
Yeah, that's well. The other thing too we should mention too is the global trade. The UN set a goal back in 1999 to cut poverty, extreme poverty in the world in half, and they completed that by 2015. And the supply chain had a lot to do with that. Goods and services, new businesses starting, companies hiring people around the world, and so this all. This is the lifeblood of the planet, if you want to call it that.
I was at the beginning of my financial career in 1980s when this all started, and I financed the company when I first came to Vancouver. One of my first projects to raise money and what was to build containers, and you know they at that time they cost between about 2,000 to 5,000 depending on the size. Most of them are 20 feet long.
Yeah,
but you know, millions—I mean, tens of millions—have been built since that time to provide the, you know, the containers for this whole trade thing issue that we're talking about. And so it's in a remarkable how here we go again, another multi-billion-dollar industry started in the early '80s till today, because containers really didn't exist before then. They did to some degree, but not in large numbers.
Not on the level they are today.
Once the trade with China started opening up, and the only way to get it, you know, to get it to work was by boat. So
There's some things just too heavy to, you know, and that's the only way you can get them here. Washers, dryers,
that's, you know, all sorts of things.
Refrigerators, all that kind of stuff. So.
And then look at these giant ships. My gosh, I would.
Oh yeah.
I would sit in my apartment and watch these ships with cars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like giant, these giant ships that people take, you know, to go on cruise ships, right?
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
They're 5-10 stories high, but boy, my God, you know, go out on the water and drive around one of these boats coming into the harbor, and it's like 200 feet tall, solid steel, no windows.
Yeah.
And it's just a giant container of, you know, 8, 9, 10 decks of cars inside. It's like, just full of cars. And it just, they literally takes 2 days when they park it. It was a place, well, Anisus Island, it's called, in the Fraser River, which is where they take these big ships up and, you know, they park them there to unload the cars. But it takes like 2 days for people to drive the cars off the ships.
Yeah, no question. Yeah. Well, yeah, you see the container ships, they're 10 or 20 stacked high.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or more.
And they all come off one at a time.
Yeah.
You know, they don't pull two or three containers off at a time.
Yeah.
It's all one at a time.
Yeah, I think in our, I can show you here. That's kind of what it looks like. This thing, this machine takes a container off at a time.
Yeah.
And that's where we, that's where we're looking at. So, it's quite a logistical miracle, if you want to, look at it from that standpoint.
That's right. And they run those 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in Vancouver, that's, you know, in the shipyards, that's what the highest paid is, the guy running one of those.
Yeah.
And, you know, they make, depending on how long, anywhere from starting at around $55-$56 an hour to $85 plus, mm-hmm. you know, double time because yeah. it's 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the size and the integration of the supply train is phenomenal. You know, this story that we're having problems with, not true. There's no way that if 80% of what we need is supplied by this, that there's a problem. Because seriously, folks, it's a product problem. It's not mm-hmm. it's not a general industry problem. You can sell it and try and sell it and throw the mud on the wall and sell it. Just get a hose out, folks. You know, spray it off and remember later the companies that didn't supply what products you wanted. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Find somebody else. That's all I can tell you. Yeah.
Well, the baby formula thing, you know, is a perfect example where, you know, Abbott runs at 100% capacity. And then when they're shut down, well, guess what? You know, you don't start that up again on a dime. You got to get all the inspections done and all other stuff and, you know, get an FDA okay that you can start up again. And then it may take a month or 6 weeks before you're back at full capacity.
Well, not only that, but, you know, your government knew about this last November.
Well, they did, yeah.
The FDA rang the bell and they didn't, mm-hmm. and the FDA didn't go in and check out Abbott's, mm-hmm. Abbott's manufacturing plant in Michigan until February.
Yeah.
It's not like they didn't have 4 or 5 months. Now, look, in the United States, there's principally 5 companies that provide Similac mm-hmm. and in different variations, you know, different licensing and trademark. But the bottom line here is that you have to be prepared. You can't react.
Yeah.
You know, you have to mm-hmm. be prepared before something happens. Mm-hmm. This terrible thing in Texas is a perfect example.
Yeah.
You know, where are the supposed hundreds of millions or billions spent by, you know, mm-hmm. Facebook and Twitter, you know, scouting their sites for terrible things that are said? And
Well, that's another show, probably.
No, I know. I shouldn't bring it up, but I'm so heartbroken over it.
It's a sad situation. And talking about that, of course, Shane, that's a perfect lead in to the award-winning Tom and Shane. We're going to be talking about this on radio on Saturday. 8 to 11 Mountain Time. You can listen live at KMMSAM.com. Don't forget the AM. And nothing to join, no sign up, no personal information needed. You don't have to do anything except listen. And you can call us, you can text us, any of that stuff. And also, our past shows are also there. Click on Tom and Shane's podcast over at KMMSAM.com. You can hear any of our past shows, including our videos on YouTube and Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. So those are all there as well. So we're happy to provide that service for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right. Well, I think we've kind of wrapped up supply chain today, Shane. Thanks for being with me, and as always. And
my pleasure. And again, you know, this is a great topic for you to watch. You know, there's a couple other sites on social media that have these type of talks. But the interesting aspect of it is, we like to give you the content first to think about the numbers, and the background, the story, the history, mm-hmm. and then have a little bit of a conversation. And we try not to make it too long because we want more subscribers. And mm-hmm. The industry says, keep it short. So we hope that you'll send us ideas or recommendations of things mm-hmm. to talk about. It'd be great if you'd like to join in and participate with us.
Yeah.
We occasionally have the Money Man Mike on. So, mm-hmm. you know, we can do a split screen and have another third person with us.
Yeah.
So,
Actually, we're going to have as many as 10 people on at one time. So if you,
there you go.
If you all want to come down, come on That's in. Right. Come
better
on in.
We'll have... It's better than a Zoom party.
That's
and,
right.
And you'll be able to watch Tom shrink as he's trying to control
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
That I'd like to see.
Yeah, right. Yeah, me shrinking would be.
Tom managing a gaggle of people, you know, trying to all say something.
Yeah, that's gonna be something. All right, man. All right, that's gonna wrap it up for us. Thanks, everyone. Hey, don't forget to hit the subscribe button, ring the notification bell. You'll always be notified of another podcast when we have one. And we're here every Tuesday and every Thursday at 10 a.m. Mountain Time. Like us, leave a comment, and we would appreciate that greatly. So would YouTube, because they weigh in on that kind of stuff. So. We will see you on the next podcast, and we will hear you on the radio Saturday, 8 to 10 Mountain Time, KMMSAM.com. Till then, bye for now.